It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum of Hope number 49. And this is the first one that I'm recording from Australia. Let's begin the week with some good news. And that is the story of Felix Ngole. Let him explain himself.
Hello, I'm Felix Ngole. I'm the student who was expelled from the University of Sheffield for actually expressing my faith in public. And when I say public, I mean on Facebook. I was responding to a question that was put to me on sexual ethics. And as a result, I was expelled from the University of Sheffield. And it's been almost 4 years now I've been fighting to clear my name. And I'm really excited today that the judges finally ruled in my favor. So I just want to thank you for standing with me. You
know, now, what's good about that is that Christian Concern and Fair Play to them, they've fought his case for him, have won an important victory that you cannot be prevented from expressing your views. The court stated that just because Felix had certain views does not mean that he would discriminate against people with whom he disagreed. I think this is actually an extremely important case, and a precedent has been set. And I have to admit, I was very surprised by it. He says this, or what Felix says is this: "This is great news, not only for me and my family, but for everyone who cares about freedom of speech, especially for those working in or studying for caring professions. As Christians, we are called to care for and serve others, and publicly and privately, we must be free to express our beliefs, especially when asked, without fear of losing our livelihoods." Well, amen to that, and congratulations, Felix. One of the links that we'll have up for you is to my new colleague here in Australia, Steve McAlpine, who has an excellent blog. And on this one, he's got some really good comments contrasting Felix's case with that of Israel Folau. More good news coming from Mexico, the state of Sinaloa, where the government there decided not to redefine marriage. They have Article 40 of the Sinaloa Family Code, which defines marriage as consisting of one man and one woman with equal rights, duties and obligations, with the responsibility to generate human reproduction in a free, responsible and informed way. Well, that's pretty impressive. There were those who were seeking to change it, so instead of a man and a woman, it would be persons. But they were defeated. So good for the Mexicans. The pushback against this agenda continues. And also in South America, we have this extraordinary story that's not been reported a lot, and that is that 3 million Brazilian evangelicals did a march for Jesus in Rio de Janeiro. Made a tremendous sound. In São Paulo it was, not in Rio de Janeiro. Again, it's interesting. I think it's one of the largest marches, certainly of Christians, ever. And it went largely unreported. The president attended, as did many others. And, you know, we need to think about this a little bit in terms of the way that our news media report things and what's actually going on. 3 million Christians marching in Brazil. That, I think, is a wonderful witness. And here's another part of that. When we think of politics, particularly in the United States, let's move north from Brazil and Mexico and go to the United States, We think Republicans are in general against abortion and Democrats are very for abortion. But that's not always been the case, and it's not actually the case now. And there's a wonderful story of Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards, who is a Democrat, a pro-life Democrat who signed a heartbeat bill. And one of the people who supported it is a Democratic state representative, Katrina Jackson. And she said this, "I think it mitigates our racist voting power. It hurts our racist power in the census. I really consider it to be modern day genocide." Well, she's right. It is the poor who suffer most from abortion. And it is, in America, the black community. Abortion, rather than being a progressive thing, is a regressive and controlling feature. And it's good to hear somebody on the left speak out against abortion. But what's not such good news is the continued genocidal attacks, speaking of genocide, against Christians, particularly in areas of Africa. And there was a news story this week on the BBC about Mali, where in a Dogon village, 100 people, I think it was 95 people, were killed. What's fascinating about this is, I mean, it's a horrendous situation. There were women, children, elderly people all killed. But the BBC report does not mention the fact that the killers were Muslims or that the victims were Christians. Why? Why is that not relevant in this particular instance? I mean, let me put it another way. If 95 homosexuals had been killed in a gay club, it would have been reported, and rightly reported as such, and as a homophobic crime. I think if 95 Muslims had been killed, they wouldn't have had any difficulty in saying that. So why not the other way around? It really is quite puzzling. Anyway, let's move on to something else, and that is, let's go to the European Union. And we're not going to talk about the opening of the European Parliament, where British MEPs disgraced themselves in different ways. The Brexit Party stood and did a gesture of turning their backs to the EU flag as the EU anthem was being played. I understand the point, but it does seem very childish. But then, not to be outdone, the Lib Dem MEPs all turned up in bright yellow shirts with "bollocks to Brexit" on the back. Well, that was mature politics, wasn't it? Now, let's not talk about our embarrassing politicians. But let's think about how four new leaders of the EU have been appointed, not elected. That includes the new commissioner, who is former German defense minister, who's also female, but it also includes the director of the European Bank. And that is, amazingly, Christine Lagarde of the IMF. Now, why do I say amazing? Two reasons. First of all, she was convicted of, not of fraud as such, but of not using her influence to prevent what was in effect a bribe being paid to somebody in France. So she's not exactly the most reliable of people. And then for anyone who knows the history of what's happened with Greece, it's Christine Lagarde and the IMF who have devastated Greece with their demands. And the idea that she is in charge of one of the most important institutions, or indeed that all four of these people have been appointed. They've not been elected. That's the point. We can't remove them. We can't vote them out. We didn't vote them in. And some will say, well, the MEPs can refuse to accept them. Yeah, they can, but they won't. That's not really how it works. This was a deal done in a back room, and it is very, very worrying for democracy. But some will say, look, it's at least women. It's a good thing. Out of the four leaders, two of them are women. Okay. Do you know, I do think there is a significant battle going on here, not between genders, but about gender. And not so much to do with the appointment of the EU leaders, but more to do with, listen to this advert from the BBC.
This is for anyone with a vagina, or anyone who knows anyone with a vagina. Cervical Cancer Prevention Week was the 21st of January to the 27th of January 2019, and I only saw one post about this, and that post was on Facebook. But it taught me four things. It taught me that one in four people don't go to their smear tests. Nine people a day are diagnosed with cervical cancer.
Now, the advert itself is for a good thing. It's trying to raise awareness of cervical cancer and the need to take smear tests. But did you notice how women were referred to? If you have a vagina. Why not use the term woman, if you are a woman? Because the term woman has now become almost meaningless. It's like The Guardian speaking about women as menstruators. Oh, it's just, you know this, I'm with the feminists on this one. The radical feminists tend to see that the whole transgender ideology is undermining the very notion of womanhood. And they're not wrong. But meanwhile, our corporations, this state indoctrination of people is going along with what I would call a corporate indoctrination. And they're falling over themselves to try and show how woke they can be. This woke capitalism combined with a kind of Chinese state style capitalism is pretty dangerous. And the latest example is Oreos. Now, for those of you who don't know Oreos, I think every American will know Oreos because it's part of being an American that you have Oreos. But Oreos have produced a special edition of LGBT Oreos encouraging people to use trans pronouns. Yep, they are using chocolate sweets to indoctrinate. Why? I think that the woke corporations are just falling over themselves just to prove how with it they really are. And also they say it doesn't hurt them, but maybe it will. So let me just give you a personal example. Here in Australia, I'm trying to get a bank. And I looked at the four main banks and I decided to go with the National Australia Bank. Why? Because the other three in their wokeness have taken up these kind of political causes, you know, with LGBT coloured ATMs and various things like that for LGBT day, hour, week, month, year, whatever it is. Except National Australia Bank decided not to do so because they were said they were there for banking, not for politics. Well, good for them. Now, one of the things that we have expressed concern about and continue to express concern about is the way that children are being targeted in this area. And here's one that's particularly disturbing. It's from a primary school sex education booklet in which it says, love is love, it doesn't matter what the age, even if there's 30 years difference. Really, you're teaching primary school children that. So you're teaching an 8-year-old that they can love is love with a 38-year-old? Oh, maybe that's too young. Maybe a 12. Or maybe a 16, which is the legal age, although Peter Tatchell wants it reduced to 14. Imagine a 14-year-old or a 16-year-old girl going out with a 36-year-old man. But in primary school, we were taught love is love. And it doesn't matter the age, whether it's 30 years. Why 30 years? Why not 40 years or 50 years? I think our children are being groomed. And when you consider Tatchell came out with a 13-point list this week saying what children should be taught, including, and I'm not going to go into the details, various sexual practices, which I don't really want to speak about, partly because children may be listening to this. And strange as it may seem, I don't think that children, that 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds should be taught various sexual practices in case they ever have to use them. This is grooming. And Tatchell is becoming one of the most dangerous obsessives in contemporary Western culture. But no one dares say so. Never mind, let me be a little bit more compassionate. And in fact, I quite fancy a new job as a professor of compassion. Oh, you haven't heard about that? Professor of law, professor of history, professor of medicine, professor of hairdressing. But professor of compassion, that's a new one. The University of Derby, you can be paid up to £75,000 to be a professor of compassion. I don't can't even begin to imagine where that goes. Forgive me, I'm not very compassionate about that one. Let's move on to something a little bit different. And it seems very trivial, but in another sense, it's an indicator of something that's profoundly wrong. When you've got these kind of big woke corporations and you've got big government and it's combined and they seek to socially control people, it becomes disturbing. So in modern society, the NGOs, the non-government organizations, are increasingly being used to provide services that the governments can't or won't. Now, NGOs are meant to be charities, and they're really meant to be independent of the state, although the state can apply certain standards. But they're not. As a charity, you're not meant to be involved in politics or have a particular political stance, maybe be involved at one level. Well, there's a report on STV News about saying the Scottish government should be braver in its support for a so-called drugs fix room in Glasgow. That's what a leading charity claimed. And Angus McNeill, who's an SNP MP, said this, tweeted this. Listen to this carefully. Maybe the charity in question needs to be braver in support for Scottish independence to sort the issue. And what's he saying? He's saying something that we've been saying for a wee while, that in the arts, in the charities, when it comes to government funding, perhaps even with business, there is an increasing tendency for authoritarian governments, including the Scottish government, to try and control things by basically working on the philosophy of he who pays the piper calls the tune. So, you want money for this charity? Well, maybe you ought to support Scottish independence. Although I suspect Mr. McNeill was really rather clumsily saying, well, things would be better in Scotland, even for charities, if we were independent. But nonetheless, I think it's an illustration of a disturbing trend. Well, we've done the UK, we've done America, Africa. Let's go to China. And there, the issue again of social credit. Now, it's come to light this week that there have been several million people who have been denied transport because of social credit. Let me explain what this is. It's interesting. I've just moved to Sydney and I'm trying to get a bank account, and the bank says you can't have a bank account without an identity. You need a phone. Can't get a phone because I don't have a bank account. So you go in at this kind of catch 22. But identity is so important, and your phone, and I mean, who would have thought this, but your phone and your bank and everything else is really important. Your cards that you use. What if you don't have them? You can't travel. Or what if when you come to travel, you're blocked from traveling because your social credit isn't good? You know, you go to buy a ticket at a railway station and you put in your card and there isn't enough money in your account, so you can't move. We understand that. But what the Chinese are doing now is, oh, well, you've expressed the wrong opinion or you've been bad in some way, and that will come up on your social credit card, and so you won't be able to travel. You won't be able to access other facilities. That's the Chinese way of doing it. I wonder if, as we began with Felix and others, that there are not ways that our state institutions and corporations are more or less doing the same thing. If you have the wrong opinion, if you don't behave in exactly the way that the cultural elites of our society say, maybe you won't have social credit, maybe you won't be able to travel. All right, let's do another couple of things before we have to go. And I apologize if this sounds a wee bit echoey. My mic is not working again, and I'm six stories up in the building where we're staying at the moment. Misquoting the Bible. The Daily Telegraph reports that the Church of England is giving 10 rules for social media, and one of them is they're not going to allow people to post things which misquote or misrepresent the Bible's teachings. Now, rather cynically for me, that makes me think, well, there's not going to be many CFS clergy, or CFE clergy rather, sorry, Freudian slip, who are going to be able to quote anything or put it on the Facebook page. Because one of the things that has been so destructive to the church is the way that the clergy have misrepresented the Bible and not taught the Bible. And on the one hand said, well, the Bible says this, but on the other, well, that's not right, and we've reinterpreted in the light of modern understanding and so on. And they've forgotten Augustine's great quote that if you believe in the Bible what you like and you leave out what you don't like, it's not the Bible you believe, but yourself.
On digital radio,
92 to 95 FM
and 810 medium wave,
BBC Radio Scotland.
I enjoyed very much just before we left doing an interview with Bill Whiteford of BBC Radio Scotland. We have a link to that whole interview, but one issue that came up, just to give you a sample, is when Bill asked this question about humanity and eternity. And you can hear my answer as well, and maybe you can think about how you would answer.
Sorry, just to interrupt there, I mean, you say you're concerned with humanity. Are you not more concerned, or should you not be more concerned with eternity? I've heard you say, I've heard it quoted that, you know, life is short, eternity is forever. And so the questions that you want to address are questions of heaven and hell, eternity, salvation, and all those things. And so that's why you take moral positions on things which some people might think are very hard line.
No, they think they're hard line compared with their own standards. I mean, my view would be that their positions are hard line. I actually think my position is remarkably tolerant, and I think tolerant and diversity comes from a Christian ethos. But your question's a brilliant question, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think humanity and eternity are opposites. It's because I think human beings are eternal that I'm interested in humanity now. So I don't look at a human being. So let's say, for example, I walk down the street in Dundee and there's a guy lying there in his own urine and so on. I don't look at him and think, what a scumbag. I think that's a human being made in the image of God. And furthermore, I see a dignity in that humanity, which is not immediately obvious from what I'm looking at. But also, I see value. So when, you know, I tread on a gnat or something, you know, it dies, I don't think, oh, well, you know, that's it gone to eternity. But with a human being, that's why sacredness of life in terms of abortion and euthanasia are such big issues to us.
Well, if you say abortion is wrong in all...
So thank you for being with me again. It's very strange recording this in Sydney. I keep thinking I'm here visiting, but I'm not. I'm here to work, and the work has begun, and we'll keep you up to date with that. Quantum will continue, and you're welcome to support that through the Podbean fundraiser. And you're also welcome. Please do continue to send in your stories. We will continue to cover stories from all over the world. Meanwhile, I leave you as someone who is now in a land down under. God bless you, and see from you or hear from you hopefully during the next week, and hopefully you'll hear from me in a week's time.
I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?